Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us today on the Real Estate Podcast. I'm Todd Sumney.
And I'm Rich LaRue.
And we are excited about today's podcast topic today. We are going to talk about six timely things that all of you need to know to protect your business, to protect you, and to prevent E&O claims. And prevention is key. That's what this is all about. So it's six timely things here in 2023, 2024, what you need to know. And
it's all about protecting our assets.
It is. And we all have stories. We all have things we can learn from. But it's important when we're the CEOs of our own business, running our business, all of you are. We want to make sure you're protected and that you also know some things that you need to know to help serve your clients and just to help your business grow. And joining us today, we have from Victor Insurance, we have Jay Lee and Eric Myers, two experts on prevention, risk reduction, E&O, everything that you all need to know to protect your business. So Jay Lee and Eric Myers, thank you for joining us today.
You're welcome
for having us.
So Rich, you run one of the largest brokerages in the country.
I do.
And you, you know, I think one of the biggest things that comes to mind on this topic is we want to make sure that all of our agents have adequate coverage and understand why they need it.
Right.
And
also to understand
right.
what is covered and what is not covered. That's by E&O insurance.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And to all our brokers that are listening, you know, Victor Insurance is there to help you navigate this and to make sure that all your agents are covered as well. So I know we have multiple audiences, you know, today on the topic. But, you know, could you tell us a little bit about Victor Insurance and what is it that you all do? Who's going first?
Sure. We're considered one of the largest and most experienced underwriting managers of real estate E&O in the industry. We serve more than 46,000 policyholders and more than 20,000 insurance agents. So we combined have about 65 years experience in industry, in program insurance industry. In particular, in real estate E&O, we have been providing coverage through CNA insurance company with the same insurance company for the past 40 years.
Wow. That's more than just a few customers. That's a lot. And I can tell you from firsthand experience, the executive team here at HomeSmart greatly appreciates your company, appreciates your partnership, and how you help us and help our agents, candidly. So, you know, I'd love to hear a little bit more about each of you as well. Can you tell us a little bit about your backgrounds?
Sure. I personally have been with Victor for the past 17 years, and most of those years underwriting real estate E&O. So this has been my profession for the past 17 years.
Yeah, I've been with Victor for, 25 years now. I've underwritten most professional lines that we write. So real estate, property managers, title agents, developers, contractors, architects, and engineers. What Jay and I mostly do is we underwrite and price risk. We evaluate risk, price it, and then underwrite the policies. One of the other things we do is provide risk management advice, sort of like this seminar, this podcast. And we also do tours around the country and speak to different real estate groups around the country on risk management and risk and real estate practice advice to reduce risk and hopefully avoid or reduce claims.
Well, when we were talking, getting to know you all before we actually did the podcast here today, Eric, I think you had said something that really stood out to me. It seems like a good place for me to start. We're going to talk about six timely things that every real estate agent needs to know. But one that I wrote down immediately was like, you said, never act like anything other than a real estate professional. Don't act like something you're not. Is that a good place to start?
Can you elaborate on that?
Elaborate on that?
That's a great place to start because probably every real estate agent broker listening to this podcast is a real estate agent or broker. You're not attorneys, you're not home inspectors, you're not appraisers, you're not title agents, you're not soil consultants. So don't act like what you're not. You're the expert in the real estate business. That's where you should focus. If you have a client that asks you, what's that stain on the wall? Like, contact an expert. I'm not the guy to answer that question, but I recommend you contact an expert. So we don't want real estate professionals to act, giving legal advice, to doing it, bringing appraisers, anything that they're not, they shouldn't do. I mean, obviously there's some that do both. You could be a lawyer and a real estate agent, but watch what you're doing because that's how you can get in trouble. And getting in trouble leads to claims, like speaking out of turn, doing things that you're not an expert in. Even like appraisals, there's a CMA and there's maybe a BPO that a real estate agent might do, but there's a line between that and actually appraising a property. So there's just certain lines that a real estate professional should not cross because they're not experts, they're not experienced in that. And it just drives up claims and it drives Jay and I crazy.
Right.
And going back to your example about the stain on the wall or the ceiling, when it gets pointed out, I mean, the extent of what we can do as real estate professionals is point out the fact that there's a stain. Many times, though, what we try to do, because we're trying to be super helpful, we try to, or we go ahead and identify the source of that stain. Oh, it's a roof leak. Oh, it's this. Oh, it's that. When in reality, we don't know what the source of that stain is.
That's
We can
exactly
say,
right.
we can safely say there's a stain.
Yep, you should get that checked out by an expert, is what the next thing out of your mouth should be.
And that's why this podcast is so important to me. It's raising awareness. It's heightening awareness because we are people. We like to talk to people. We like to help. We're conversational, and you're having that conversation, and then someone says, "Hey, there's a stain on the wall, and what's that?" And we just naturally we want to serve. We want to help.
We
We
want to
want
fix it.
to
Well, we don't
fix
want to
it.
fix the stain, but
Well, no.
we want to fix the question, by giving an answer. Oh, well, that's
And we want to
this. And
inform.
it could be something to be really concerned about,
Right.
or it could be nothing.
But here you have two experts in the industry who see this day in and day out, and it's
Who
just
deal with lawsuits around this kind of
correct.
stuff.
And so it's just
And
a good reminder of
sorry.
don't be anything other than a real estate
Right.
professional.
What we don't want to hear out of a real estate professional's mouth is slap some paint on that stain. Don't worry about it. That leads to more claims than you can imagine.
Oh my
Just
gosh.
trying to get
No,
the
as
sale through. So it's just paint over that. That's going to give you a heart attack, but we've seen it plenty of
No, my
times.
heart just skipped a beat.
It did. Okay, so for the record, how would you suggest that an agent respond, just to be clear? So customer says there's a stain on the wall. What is that?
I'm not an expert. You should contact an expert. You should contact a home inspector or a water mediation specialist or another expert. And that is not for the real estate agent to answer.
Okay.
Would you agree that we are the experts in recommending the experts?
Sure.
Right? I mean, that's our job, is to know which experts to call on for that.
I certainly agree with that, but there's also the caveat that you don't want to refer to a professional who is not that who you whom you have not vetted out. Make sure to
Thank you.
Yes,
make
agree.
sure to refer to I would say at least minimum three professional in the same industry, and let the buyer decide who they want to use, because if you're referring a professional on an exclusive level and that person does not necessarily do a great job, that could kind of put you in a bit of a place as well.
That's the best practice that we all agree on. You bet.
So I guess, before we dig into the six specific examples or six topics that are timely, can you give us a quick overview of what does E&O cover? What does it not? And what are adequate coverages that agents and brokers need to be aware of? Is that an okay question?
I mean, I think we call our policy real estate E&O. So basically, it says errors and omissions, meaning mistakes or things that are left out or things that are not necessarily on the contract, or services that have not been rendered as promised. That's the basis of the real estate E&O coverage. It comes with a duty to defend clause, meaning as long as you are providing real estate services, our policy will provide defense against the lawsuits that comes forward.
So it's for errors that an agent may inadvertently make,
right?
Or omissions that an agent inadvertently makes. Right. If it's an omission on purpose, that's called something else, isn't it?
That's called crime, yes.
Or fraud, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So the moral of that point is, agents, if you know something, you must disclose it. In fact, for years, I've told our agents, anytime they call me and they say, Rich, do I need to disclose? And whatever follows that in that question, the answer is yes. Because if you're taking the time to call me and ask me or email me the question, do I need to disclose this? Yeah, obviously it is a material fact. Can you over-disclose? There's probably cases where you can. There's instances where you can over-disclose, but I just don't know when that is.
I've heard that time and time again. All of the entire broker team, they say that, well, if you're calling me and if you're having to ask me, then can you answer that question
well,
yourself?
That warms my heart, because right. Then they're listening to me too.
They are. They are, but they say that over and over, yeah, because they, yeah, really are trying to educate, right, the agent and help them be a better agent. And sometimes I've heard them say, so, you know, can you answer that question yourself? I mean, deep down in your, yeah, heart, you know.
Right.
And yes, you're right, I do need to.
Yeah, well, and why wouldn't you,
right,
agent, why wouldn't you want to disclose that?
Right.
Well, they may not buy the house. Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, if there's a question, if it's a material fact, and I think this, I mean, some of you are slapping your foreheads going, yeah, well, yeah, Rich, of course. I mean, we know, right, this. This is super basic. Well, you know, sometimes we get caught up in the transaction and we forget these things. But if, you know, you think that somebody may not move forward with the transaction based on information that they get, they better get that information. They need to have that information. Right. You need to have them have that information.
Right.
Rich, we have a slogan on our side, like on the insurance side, the perfume of premium, where sometimes a stinky account, stinky risk smells pretty good because the premium's high. So I can see it translating into the real estate side that this maybe not be the best deal, but I can get a lot of money by selling this house. So it's right, goes on our side too.
Right, right.
So, you know, we talked, you know, the whole topic of the episode, prevention, you know, is key. What you need to know about, you know, coverages and E&O. What are adequate coverages that an agent needs?
Well, I would say that most important thing is what's covered on the policy and what's not covered. And when we talk about real estate E&O policy, we're talking about not just providing coverage for your activity as a just real estate agent. We're also talking about services rendered as a leasing agent, property managers. A lot of times mortgage brokers are included under the professional definition as well. So when we say adequate coverages, we're talking about a lot of services that are involved, not just the residential sales side of it, but other services that are related to the real estate professionals.
So what I hear you saying is adequate has a definition a little bit like an attorney would define reasonable,
right?
It changes based on the circumstances or what the transaction is. Is that correct?
That is correct. And when we, how we define real estate professionals under our policy, we define it as real estate agents or real estate professional providing real estate services on behalf of our named insurers. Mm-hmm. So it would provide coverage for the agents as well as the staff employees of the real estate firm that we're insuring.
Right. Okay, so digging into the six key timely topics, our topic number one is really about prevention tips. Preventing something from even becoming a claim in the first place. Can you share with our audience a little bit about that tip? What do agents need to know?
I think we knocked the first one out, was know your limitations. If you're not an appraiser or a contractor or inspector, don't go beyond your area of expertise. So to me, that's the first one we knocked out. The next one, I would say the big tip is to document conversations, your files, and document in one place. Back in the old days, agents would have a, you know, whatever notes they took on a piece of paper, they shove a copy in their trunk, they shove a copy in their desk, and everything got messed up and mixed up. And now with transaction management systems, it's a little easier to keep a record of everything. But really, to me, documentation of conversations, like date, time, who you talk to, the topic, is key to putting information in place that can help avoid or mitigate a claim. So that would be a key one for me.
Mm-hmm. Right. I would also add a full disclosure, not some disclosure. I think that's a key, focusing on the details and full transparency of the transaction. We recently had a claim where it involved a ranch property down in Texas, where a buyer wanted to buy a property and use that property as a horse ranch for 11 horses that they owned. The agent acted as both buyer and sellers. So they acted as a dual agent in that transaction. They disclosed that property has some flooding issues in the past, but not the house, which was correct. But after the transaction, the buyer found out that the property had a constant flooding issues. And they just found out that the land was moist all the time to a point where they could not keep the horses. So they just disclosed the fact that the house was never flooded in the past, but they didn't disclose the fact that old property has some flooding issues in the past. So a lot of things like that, where they just leave some of the information out, does not necessarily disclose the entire history of the property.
So now, if the seller does not tell the agent that,
right,
then in all likelihood, the agent has a very limited liability on mm-hmm. that situation. But right. the seller has full exposure. If they know that that property is always wet, you know, it's not a lake, but it's swamp-like, and if they don't disclose that, that's an issue.
Right, and part of that is a seller just, choosing to disclose the certain part of it, because they disclose the fact that house was never right. flooded.
Well, and it's an issue that E&O insurance may not cover. Right. That's what I intended to complete that with, sure. because if the seller knew, but didn't disclose that, that's more than just a casual omission.
The yeah. allegations we see in claims like that is, well, the agent should have known. The agent's held him or herself out to be an expert in this neighborhood, and you should know that it floods here. And you didn't tell me that it floods here. As an expert, you should. You didn't meet the standard of care as a real estate professional.
And I think the key issue was that intended use of the property was fully disclosed by the buyer, because they were looking for a property to raise their horses. And our agent represented that property as a suitable property for what the buyer was looking for. So in that regards, there could have been, the buyers were alleging that there could have been more care to disclose such history in the past.
Right, got it.
And so when situations like this arise, you know, tip number one here is prevention tips, you know, preventing it from even becoming a claim. When the agent first has wind that there's an issue, Eric, what is it that they should do?
Talk to Rich.
Communicate with your broker, right?
But yeah,
call your broker.
Don't hide it. Don't cover it up. Act on it immediately. But notify the risk manager or the broker at your agency. Do not admit liability. Just like if you're in a car crash, don't admit liability. Don't admit liability. Just say, I'll report this to my manager. And just then it'll be up to Rich or the broker in the office to determine if they want to involve the E&O carrier right away or do a little investigating on their own. But act on it. Don't just hope it goes away. Don't brush under the table. Don't say not a big deal. Just act on it is the key there.
Yeah, don't ignore it. Yeah. So not using the horse property example, because that's a very specialized situation. And uh-huh. The buyer, I think, in the scenario that you gave, the buyer has a serious claim there. But in some other scenarios where You know, there's some questions about it. Many times these things can be resolved between the agent and their client before there is a claim, before there is I know as the agency, you want to be informed immediately, but also there's some things that agents can do and take care of, you know, by consulting with their manager or their broker to resolve issues so they don't continue. And I feel like I'm beating around the bush here, so let me just get right to it. You know, there's a deductible. Everybody has a deductible on their policy. So if you can resolve the problem for less than what your deductible is, you need to do that. Because otherwise, I mean, you file a claim, that deductible is gone. You guys are involved. And your attorneys for the carrier are involved, but the agent's deductible is gone forever at that point, unless somehow it can be resolved for less than that. But we have some latitude there, is what I'm getting at. And, right. And so talk to your manager, talk to your broker, and some of these minor speed bumps can be taken care of. Clearly, by the time you two get involved, it's a serious claim. You know, it's like when I know about an issue that one of our agents is having, it's an issue. You know, we haven't been able to resolve it with, you know, through just the normal day-to-day transactions, you know, of problem solving.
I agree with you, Rich, but I would also, if it were my firm, have your agents report it to you no matter what, no matter how small it is, how quickly they think they make it go away. Because the time it gets to you or to us, it's probably blown up, but you might have some expertise to resolve it for less than deductible. We might even have some expertise, but
right.
I would say don't let the agent should not try to handle on their own 99% of the time. They should involve their manager or the broker owner of the firm.
Yes.
Every time.
Agreed. Yep.
Agreed.
Yep. Let us know.
Yep. So in the tip number two about preventing E&O claims, let's talk a little bit about agent or owner agent sales.
The bane of my existence. The only thing that's worse than owner agent sales is an owner agent sale where there's a septic system. And disclosure around that. We have seen some issues. But yeah, let's talk about owner agent sales.
I mean, I think it's well, let's spit around the bushes. When we say agent-owned property sales, it's usually excluded on most policies. Now, when we say excluded, but we also come around and get back the coverage for sale of those owned properties if certain conditions are met. And right. There are about 4 to 5 conditions.
Right.
But big thing is make sure that home inspection has been completed.
Yep.
And also recommend home warranty policy to be provided as well, and full seller disclosure of the ownership interest that has to be provided, as well as the full seller disclosure regarding the full history of the property. And lastly, the use of the state approved contracts. Those are the 5 things that we usually look for to make sure that we can revert and provide coverage back to the insured for the sale of the residential homes by the insured.
Right. And we require all those things. Now, we do have some franchisees listening. They may have some different policies with that. So agents, as you're listening to this, if you hear something that doesn't resonate with you, do check with your broker or your manager on that. But I think the important thing here to remember is that coverage, any coverage that we have on an owner agent sale is covering the agent acting as an agent for themselves, not covering them as an owner of the property, because E&O insurance does not cover the seller of the property, correct? It covers the agency and the brokerage, right? And so there is some confusion there with owner agents thinking, you know, oh, as an owner, I've got coverage. No, you don't. No seller of property has E&O insurance coverage, but the agent does. So if they do something that's covered for them acting as an agent for themselves, then there is coverage there. However, the main thing is, and that's why we require those four items, is to make sure that we have those things. And if all that is done, in all likelihood, we have covered 98% of the issues that could come up, except for septic issues. And so, agents, if you have a septic system, make sure that you get that thing certified, pumped, and that there's no issues. And we're watching for that. So.
Yeah, I'd like to add just that one key word. The policy, the real estate annual policy, simply put, is designed to provide coverage for professional services you rendered. Not necessarily, as said, it's not necessarily to provide coverage for your ownership of the property.
Exactly. Thank you for that clarification.
Yes.
I like the way that you said that. That's, yeah, that's eloquent. I get that. Love it.
All right, Eric, anything to add on owner-agent sales?
I just say the allegations are always failure to disclose. You owned it. You should have known better. You should have told me this. You should have disclosed this. That's where they all come from. Yeah. So I think we addressed it.
Yeah.
All right, then tip number three, avoiding E&O claims regarding the use of love letters.
Yes,
the love letter expert.
We have silence on that one. Nobody wants to tackle love letters. No, that's hilarious.
It became a pretty hot topic mm-hmm. for the past few years, and we've seen some claims that has become a pretty huge claims based on the allegation of discrimination, because a lot of times love letters involve personal information about race, family status, or race, all those things. So it can be interpreted as two, like if the seller used that information to make that decision to sell the property, that could be seen as a discriminatory practice. Or if the buyer put some discriminatory intent to purchase a property, for example, if they wanted to purchase that property based on the predominant race of that neighborhood. If the seller used that letter or accepted that letter and made the decision to sell the property to that person, that could be seen as evidence against the seller as well. So what we usually recommend is if you are against accepting the love letters and just base the decision based on the financial qualification, and try to not to use the personal or subjective factors as the main factors for the sales.
NAR came out, it was a year or two ago, and highly recommended against using buyer love letters. And some agents, still use them. Check with your broker or manager to see what your office policy is. However, it's really difficult to write a love letter for your buyer. And for those of you who don't know what we're talking about, this is a letter of introduction the buyer that the buyer will write to give to the seller along with their offer, saying, oh, we really love your home. Johnny loves the second bedroom in the hallway, and it's perfect for our dog. So far, we haven't crossed any lines. And that would be an okay love letter, but it is so easy to cross the line and get into an area where it is it's a discriminatory mm-hmm. practice and we have violated fair housing. And so you just, when in doubt, just say no, don't do it. If you feel you must, please run the letter past your broker mm-hmm. before you send it. Because you're helping your client write the letter, and your clients don't necessarily, they're not as educated with the Realtor Code of Ethics and Fair Housing Law as you are. And so they may not know what exactly to write or to keep out of that letter. And there's just such a hot potato. I would recommend that you just say no and you don't do it. That said,
one of the things,
an agent out there who has represented a buyer, who probably has, you know, I mean, it's like all of us have used these love letters, and we've made money with them because, you know, it's like, oh, the sellers fall in love with the buyers and they want them to have the house, mm-hmm. you know, and that's why we write the letters. That's right. Why our clients write the letters, but just be super careful or don't do it at all.
Yeah, what gets people in trouble is the love letter says, we love the house, it's so close to the synagogue or the mosque, and they don't get the deal. And then they say, well, you didn't sell me the house because I'm Jewish or Muslim or whatever. And so that just comes back. Even if that's not true, there's allegations, there's claims that come out of the love letters that with NAR, we'd rather not see love letters.
Agree. And I think we can leave it at that because I keep on digging the hole and I'm making it worse.
No, that's good advice. That's what we're here to talk about. Okay. All right. Tip number four has to do with buyers and sellers remorse. We went through a time period recently where the market was really hot. A lot of multiple offers, a lot of home prices going up, homes selling over asking. And then it seems like the data would show that more legal activity follows 16 months later, something like that, right? So it leads to, buyers and sellers remorse and claims. What could you share with our agents?
While you're thinking about that, let me tee this up just a little differently.
Okay.
Because we were pushed so hard, buyers were pushed so hard to make their offers as appealing as possible. They would remove their inspection of the property. They would remove their appraisal contingency and what have you. And so, they buy a property, there's no inspection on it, or there is an inspection, and they just don't pay attention to anything. And like Todd said, 16 months later, they go, we've got a problem with this house, whatever it is. We've got this leak, we've got that, we've got mold. And it's your fault. Because, we didn't have the inspection done. And so are you seeing those claims coming in now?
I can certainly see those claims are coming in now. And usually with a buyer's remorse, I would say it starts with a small inconveniences, like light switch not working or some issues with the appliances. But those little things add up into becoming a full-blown buyer's remorse. And you talked about full like inspection, and we also recommend home warranty because home warranty policy can take care of those little issues into becoming a huge issue. There's a reason why we recommend those the conditions that we had mentioned previously to give coverage back for the sale of owned home by the agent. There's a specific reason as to why those 4 to 5 risk management criteria are usually recommended.
Buyer's remorse now, one of the things we see a lot of is with the increase in material costs and labor costs to repair homes, people are thinking, well, geez, I spent $500,000 on a house. I'm going to spend much more than I expected to repair little things that I thought would be less, and that's my agent's fault. Even if it's not, there's just the remorse that I'm spending a lot more on this property than I ever imagined. And it's hard for an agent to educate their clients on that, but it causes unhappiness, and an unhappy client is one that is more likely to have a claim against the agent.
Well, it goes back to documenting your file, which was one of the very first things that we led with. And so hopefully you have documented your file from those transactions that we did when the market was fast and furious and a bit insane, because there's just so much going on, and sometimes we forget these things and we can't. We just have to, keep on disclosing and recommending that if a buyer chooses to not have an inspection done, that you have documented written documentation sent to them stating, hey, we recommend this. You have chosen not to do this because of market conditions or whatever it might be. But you follow that up with an email and you throw that into your file. Should it ever come up, you have a story to lean back on there.
And this was just something that I thought about. You're talking about how hot the market was past few years ago. And I'm certainly see a potential of adjustable rate mortgages that could be coming into a picture in a few years, because we're looking at the interest rate, it's just kind of increasing as we go. It doesn't necessarily seem like it's going to come down. So what if those loans mature in a few years? You're really going to have a financial hardship going forward with that variable interest rate.
So what you're recommending is to make sure that they're fully disclosed on what that loan is, and those variable rates. Is that what you're saying?
And I could see that certainly being an issue.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Anything else to be proactive to prevent those buyer and seller situations?
I would just say the multiple offers, since you guys brought that up, is a tricky situation. Knowing whose offer was in first, who's the current offer, making sure everyone's informed there's multiple offers, and is that allowed to be, are you allowed to, is your client or the seller aware that there's multiple offers, or aware that there's the proposed, the people write the, I'm sorry, edit this out, but the potential purchasers know that there's multiple offers, and there's just some issues with that, just knowing what, when, and how, who's in first, who's on first with multiple offers. It can get to be a sticky situation where the agent can be the one with the fingers pointed at that I made a great offer, but you didn't present it, or you didn't present it on time. So there's situations we've seen claims arise out of the multiple offer situations. So we just say, just be really careful and document your file and keep everyone in the loop on multiple offers.
Yeah, we were experiencing a number of DRE complaints and ethics complaints against agents because of the lack of communication back. And so a good prevention there is to make sure that as a listing agent, as you're getting multiple offers, stay in communication with those agents who are bringing you those offers. And if the offer is rejected, make sure that you give that rejection back to the buyer's agent. Make sure that it's been acknowledged by the seller of when that offer was presented. That ounce of prevention goes a long ways. You know, and agents were saying, you know, at the time, well, I've got 15 offers. I can't take the time to respond back to the other 14 people. Yes, you can. That's your job. You're a professional. That is expected of you. So there is no excuse on the lack of communication there.
You know, we had a claim a few years ago where an agent purposely did not disclose there was a multiple offers because the one of the offer was made by his son-in-law. So the other offers was not even brought to the seller's attention.
Oh my goodness.
Yes, so something like that happens. It's kind of unbelievable, but it has happened in the past before.
I'm sure. Yeah. Wow. Well, I'm sure that didn't end well for that
No.
agent, so.
I guess the key words that I keep hearing all of you say, this is more your side of the business, right? Is communication, 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 documentation, documentation, organization, and communication, right? So, great. Okay, so point number five, having to do with timely info, top claims, like recent claims data. What are the recent claims going on right now? What's the timely data showing us right
So,
now?
Todd, you mentioned about buyer's remorse, and it happens within the 16 months of period. Like as far as number of claims wise, we're actually seeing a number of claims wise, we're actually seeing a decrease in number of claims reported as of compared to last year. And if you really put that into perspective, that kind of relates to the number of transactions that has been completed within the past year. So overall, as an industry, we're experiencing significant decrease in number of transactions, and that's correlating to the number of claims that are being reported. So it's actually down about 23% compared to last year.
Good to know.
But in terms of actual cost of the the indemnity or the damages or the cost to defend a claim, it's on the rise. And we talked about the inflation factors and the cost of the labors. All those things are combining into, so it pretty much evens out at this point in terms of number of claims reported, but the cost to defend a claim and cost to pay for the damages are kind of wiping out the differences as of right now.
I immediately got excited, as I'm sure many of our listeners and watchers mm-hmm. did, with the reduction of claims. Mm-hmm. One would think that a reduction of premium would shortly follow. However, what we're experiencing is the cost of defense has right. skyrocketed. You know, while we might be down 23% in claims, the cost of defense is up 70%.
That is very correct, sir.
Yeah.
Add in materials and labor.
Topic, but yep. it's.
Yeah. And one of the interesting fact I recently read an article was the talk about the labor cost and the number, the average age of the people working in construction industry has risen about 10 years within past 2-3 years. So there are no more contractors coming into building homes. So that effectively has impact on the labor costs going forward as well as the
fascinating.
Building.
Fascinating.
Yeah,
Todd, building material that's a topic costs. For another podcast, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah, that's things yeah. that make you say,
Right.
Yeah.
So as far as actual data, real quick, just before we move on to the next one, is just timely recent claims data. As an industry as a whole, what are the top three claims coming from? What types of claims? Do you track that? I don't mean to put you on the spot. Maybe you don't have that data, but as far as what
we do have some data, but it's kind of I would say vague. Like that, our claims are recorded in just simple words. So the biggest claim scenario is negligence. So the real estate agent or broker did something wrong. Is really they didn't meet the professional standard of care as a real estate agent.
Okay.
So that could be almost anything, almost many claims, like close to 40% of claims mention negligence.
Okay.
The next biggest one is misrepresentation, which is it on septic or sewer? Did you tell me that I wouldn't be able to hear the loud elementary school three doors down, things like that, misrepresentation. The next biggest one is just the accusation or allegation is fraud or an intentional act or misconduct by the agent. But again, a lot of times lawyers throw everything in there. So it's a little hard to tell from our data where the actual claims are coming from. But on the other side, we kind of tried to dig into what the problem area was. And there's valuation is maybe 10 to 15% is that you overpriced the property or underpriced the property. So I didn't get enough money for my property or didn't sell fast enough because you overpriced the property. There's always a water infiltration issues. There's a 5% or so of claims seem to be, you know, the roof was leaking, the basement was leaked or something. Those things come up. And then there's just errors in contracts. So the agent did something wrong in the contract. One of the ones we've seen is you listed at 2,200 square feet and it's really 2,000 square feet. So someone, the purchaser is now looking for 200 square feet of home and there's a claim because their home is 10% less in size than they thought and they can't use it for their intended purposes, the allegation. So those I think are a little bit into the where the claim problems are. Do you have anything else on that, Jay?
No, I mean, that pretty much put it into, I would say, like a failure to disclose. That would be the biggest item. I would say all combined, if you really look into it, you can put that all three different categories into that failure to disclose area.
Right.
Yeah.
That was very helpful information. Thank you for sharing those buckets. That was good. Tip number six, or topic number six, preventing E&O claims having to do with large portal scams. I've been around the industry a long time. It seems like this has really reared its head more in more recent years, right? As the portals have gotten bigger, consumer portals, consumer activity, and
because
technology,
the fraudsters have gotten more
advanced.
Yeah, right. they're really good now.
Right. So first off, can you explain to the audience real quick, what is the issue? What are these large portal scams that are going on? And then what do agents need to know about avoiding them? You and I sat in on a meeting about this the other day where we talked about it with several key experts about you know, the problem as a whole, but I'd love to hear from you. You know, can you define the problem first? Tell us what's going on. Are you there?
Yeah, just
a moment. Oh, we're here. We're waiting for each other to speak.
No.
Sorry.
Eric, I yield.
Basically, what happens is, as Rich mentioned and Todd mentioned, the scammers are getting very sophisticated. So what they're ending up doing is stealing information from a homeowner and then approaching, and usually they find a home on Zillow or Redfin. Then they end up finding ways to steal the information from the homeowner, their name, their address, their phone, maybe more personal information that scammers have access to. And they're contacting a real estate professional to sell that property. Once that property is listed and sold, the scammer has the proceeds directed to their own fraudulent bank account. So the buyer sends the money to a fake account and the scammer runs away with the money. And the owner of the home may or may not even know that their home was sold. And then the buyer comes back and says, well, here's my new home. And what happened to the home? And where's my keys? Where's everything? I sent money to buy this home. And it just turns into a pretty ugly situation. And the scammer's gone and not around. We've seen definitely an uptick on it. NAR's published some information about it. I think we published an article about it recently too. So the scam is growing and more common nowadays. So
typically these things, sorry for talking over you on this, but typically what happens is this is a vacant property. If it's a residential property, you know, or it's vacant land, right? Because there's no seller there to know that somebody's looking at their house or looking at their land. They're out of state or whatever it might be, but they're not there knowing that the property is for sale. You know, unless they have a conscientious neighbor who's paying attention and hits them up. Hey, I see you're selling your lot. What's up? You know, we've actually stopped two sales that I can point my finger at because of a neighbor.
In both instances, were they vacant land or vacant
homes?
In
both of these instances, they were vacant land. Yes, they were.
So I read an article just in the industry news the other day about a homeowner whose parents had passed away. They had left him a home, and next to the home was some acreage, and it was really one piece of property, but somehow they had cordoned off the acreage and they'd already built a new home on it before he was notified. They hadn't moved in yet. They caught the fraud, but the home was almost complete on the empty acreage.
Wow.
And you know, so it's
that took
problem.
Some time.
Yeah.
It's taking a long time to build a house these days.
The owner was out of state.
Yeah.
The owner was out of state and just had no clue, and someone alerted him about building on his land. And that's what started the whole undercover of the problem.
Yeah.
But
the I guess the one thing that I want to say to our agents is, if somebody calls you up or reaches out via email or however they contact you, and if they've got this property that they want to sell below market, they just want a quick sale because, you know, and there's all kinds of stories that go along with it. Oh, I've got a family member that's in the hospital. They're dying. I need money for treatment. We just need to sell really quick. If it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. And you might want to dig a little farther. You might want to take a look at an ID. Make them send you a copy of their driver's license or some sort of ID that shows that they are the owner. Shows that they are the person that they are representing themselves to be. Sometimes, you know, a driver's license could be easily duplicated. There's other things out there, but just, you know, be careful. Pay attention.
I would say on top of that, you can do online searches for who owns the property. And if it says that Eric Myers owns this property, you could probably search me and find my picture to make sure it matches the driver's license that was provided. There's different ways to verify ownership before proceeding with the listing and the transaction.
Right.
Yep.
I've seen instances where the scammers actually requested a fee from real estate agents to list their property. It could be as little as $1,000 or $2,000, but they...
You can have my listing if you send me a grand.
Yeah, exactly. Because they're not available. It's going to be a quick sale. And sometimes real estate agents fall for it. And it has happened before. And unfortunately, these things kind of happen.
Yeah.
Right. Well, so how do we wrap that one up? What's the takeaway on those large portal scams? If it's too good to be true.
If it's too good to be true, it probably is. Dig a little farther.
And I think the other, in hearing some of the stories, like if people won't come meet with you face to face, or if they won't send you that identification, or, you know.
Hey, you know what? We live in an area where there are a lot of out-of-state property owners. Right. And so not meeting somebody is not unusual.
Right.
For our agents, but take the extra step, make sure you know who you're talking to.
Great. Good. Mm-hmm. Well, sorry, go ahead.
No,
Jamie.
No, go ahead. No, I was just going to say that some of the instances where we tracked down these scammers in the past, where FBI got involved, and it turns out to be some teenager in Europe using computers to do all these scams. So when you actually do those interviews and when you actually request, identification and try to verify that information, it actually helps. It could prevent that, like we said, it could prevent that from happening.
Yep.
Well, that's great. Well, real quick, I guess I'd love to have Jay Lee and Eric do a quick little summary, but I want to tell you real quick, for those of you that are watching on YouTube, I want to kind of flash up on the screen here a little bit some information about, Victor Insurance. I just want to tell you all a little bit about them. They $2.5 billion a year in annual premiums, 20,000 active insurance agents, 65,000 plus years of experience, or 65,000 plus. 65 plus years of experience.
65,000 years?
65,000. What am I doing here today? Man. 65 years of plus years of experience. Terrible. See, I can't even read what's on the slide. But Victor Insurance Manager is one of the largest, most experienced underwriting managers, specialty insurance programs in the world. 46,000 policyholders. Thank you very much for joining us today, talking to our agents. Available in all 50 states. U.S. territories, A-rated carrier. There are coverage programs available for agents, brokers, property managers, appraisers, auctioneers, commercial real estate professionals, leasing agents, mortgage brokers, etc. So, my big piece of information is for those of you, we do have a HomeSmart Victor Insurance Marketplace. And the URL to that, I know I don't read it as well as you, Rich, but you can go to.
That's a really long URL.
It's a long one. I'm going to try to.
Please, it's all yours.
Yeah, I'm going to try to read it anyway. Go to YouTube though and watch this. But victorinsurance.com/us/solutions/real-estate/homesmart.html, and that'll get you connected to the Victor Insurance team. And Eric and Jay Lee, thank you very much for being here with us. Eric Myers, Jay Lee, senior underwriters with Victor Insurance. Closing thoughts and comments from the three of you, and then I'm going to be quiet. Who wants to go first?
Jay?
Yeah, I'll go first. I say just focus on the basics, the usual home full disclosures, home inspection, recommending home warranties, and just be transparent about the whole transaction. I say that would be the keys to preventing claims and preventing something small from happening to become much bigger issue.
I'd agree with that. I would also add, disclose, even if you're not sure, disclose. and then document your files. That's the best way to reduce or claims, and it's a good business practice also. And then the other thing I would add is visit that that really long URL that Todd mentioned. There is a risk management information on that site that can help you. There's claims scenarios. There's we call them war stories. There's other risk management information on there to take a look at that can address different situations that might occur for a real estate professional.
That's right. Thanks for that reminder. You and your website, you do have a wealth of information, case studies, links, resources for agents. You know, the slide on the screen says protection that never sits still, an exclusive offering to HomeSmart firms. You've created a lot of very valuable information for HomeSmart brokers, HomeSmart agents. Go check out. I'll read it really fast, victorinsurance.com/us/solutions/real-estate/homesmart.html. So Rich.
Well, I think that Eric could be a real estate broker because you're reading my mind. My parting thought is, if you have to ask, should I disclose? You need to disclose. It comes back to that. We have avoided so many situations. I'm sure we've avoided unknown situations because of that. Again, Eric, you back that up by saying, keep a good file, write things down, keep notes. It can be a note to yourself. It can be a note in the file. Don't always use the same pen. It's okay. Grab what you've got. Handwritten notes are great. If it's typed into your contact management, that's fine. You've got something that you're keeping track of. You know what? Even texts and emails. So just document, document, document. Disclose, disclose, disclose.
Right.
It's boring. It's not a sexy solution, but it's just the way that it needs to be.
But it is so important.
That's
it
critical.
Is so important. And that's why I loved where we started too, where just never be anything more than never act like anything other than a real estate professional and just be, be on point with what you're saying and what you're communicating. So Jay, Eric, great stories today. Thank you very much for being with us. And we really do appreciate the Victor Insurance relationship that you have with HomeSmart, with our brokerages, and with our agents, and the protection, the advice, the guidance, everything that you all provide us. You're an important part of our business. And
thank you for being part of our family.
Yeah.
Thank you for having us.
Appreciate you helping our agents learn how to protect themselves and protect their businesses. So Jay and Eric, thank you. For those of you that are listening, thank you. Please give us a thumbs up down there in the like area. Hope you like the podcast. Keep an eye on future episodes. We have a whole lot of episodes coming out right now, all of them designed to help you grow your business, protect your business, and become better real estate agents and protect your customers, serve your team, your customers as well. So without any further ado, I'm Todd Sumney. Thank you for joining us here today.
And I'm Rich LaRue, and we'll see you next time.
See you on future episodes.
Like what you're hearing on The Real Estate? Tell your friends about us. Tell them to check out all of our episodes on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and Spotify. And don't forget to send any topics you want us to tackle to therealestate@homesmart.com.